Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Welcome back, folks. Obviously, Michael Heck has shed the jet lag. He's back, the full Monty, the full presentation, producing
my
show.
We're back, baby. Full frontal economic development. Not safe for work.
He put his firefighter's uniform on the side for one.
It's going to be one of those birthday parties, huh?
There's a calendar coming your way, folks, whether you want it or not.
Yeah, the men of economic development, that's going to fly off the shelves.
All right, Michael, 25 days from the game. We should probably call Jay Cicero and remind him of that. Folks, if you don't know, Jay Cicero hates the countdown.
I think Jay knows. I was just with Jay and his team in a meeting. We do these weekly war room meetings with over 25 different organizations led by Joe Threat, who's going to be joining us. And, I guess if I have to use an analogy, we see the runway. You know, there are some cross drafts, but we've got an experienced pilot, and we're just asking everybody to fasten their seatbelts, and we're going to land this thing. But we might have to brake hard.
Do me a favor, just remember to put the landing gear down for us, please.
Yeah, you know, but as a precaution, can we just, like, foam the runway? You know, like, this is belt and suspenders time. We're doing great. You can see it all around. The streets in the French Quarter are getting done. They're getting done in the CBD. The murals are now going up. This one from Carl Joe Williams on the Civil Courthouse is going to look beautiful. And the one that's going up now on Girard Street, as you go through to the arena and the dome, I mean, it looks like Michelangelo like painted the Sistine Chapel, but did a second line. It's if you haven't seen it yet, people, drive by. It is nuts. It's beautiful. I saw the printing.
Look,
of the
that
big
description bed, doesn't pique your curiosity, nothing
right.
Will.
No. I mean, it's really epic what Hellas Foundation and the Arts Council have done there. It's basically a fresco of the soul of New Orleans. It's everything that we stand for, and it's actually not going to be totally done by the Super Bowl, but the center part is done. And then I saw the printing of, we're doing a massive, like, 70-foot-high Becky Foss that's going on the marble fascia of the Plaza Tower building. It's going to be like big, like, printed industrial Spanx just going on the building, holding it all in, slimming and beautifying. And then we've got other stuff going around the base.
Holding it together as well?
Holding it's kind of like Glissé meets corset meets industrial engineering. It's never before seen. I hope it works.
I think we lost the audience 5 minutes ago.
People have tuned out. They're like, I'm going back to NPR to, like, you know, hear about wokeism anyway.
Yeah. So, I have to tell you, I drove down Poydras the other day about, I guess, 12 blocks. it was nice. My back didn't hurt. Neck was good. Yeah, it was a beautiful ride. It's funny when you start noticing these things, right?
Well, it is, and I also think it's important. I mean, so what I'm kind of discovering is that infrastructure is kind of like pain. We don't have that much memory for it, so we documented before conditions, and then we're going to document the after, because I think we want to remind people how far we've come in such a short period of time. Just to reset expectations. With proper focus and will, the ability does exist to do this. And and the city can look like this. I mean, the improvements we're making are going to last for years, but the city can look like this all of the time. So we hope there's kind of a reset of what we expect out of our infrastructure.
So let's talk about the Super Bowl a little bit. Things have already started. The NFL's presence here is huge already. Some restrictions in place, but the Super Bowl is really so much more than just one night, right?
Yeah, the game is just 4 or 5 hours. That is almost the closing ceremony on what's become a mini Olympics. The activities really start the Monday, Tuesday before, and it's essentially a week-long event that's going to attract more than twice as number of people who can actually fit in the dome. So there's a ton that has to go right to get up to the dome, and then we're going to have 125 million plus people watching, 6,000 plus journalists. So I think describing it as a mini Olympics is accurate. I'm starting to read a book about Dan Doktoroff, who was the deputy mayor for economic development under Bloomberg. And I'm reading about how he used the Olympic bid for New York City for 2012 as a forcing function to do an enormous amount of work in the city, parks, parkways, building, transportation infrastructure. New York didn't get that. London did, but the infrastructure remained. And I think that was just another example of how we can use these events as a focusing and forcing function to create benefits that really have value, regardless of the event itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Super Bowl opening night, there's actually kind of like the Olympics, right? An opening night celebrating the AFC and NFC champions as they arrive in New Orleans. And that's held on February the 3rd. The game is on the 9th, right?
The 9th, yeah. So,
and there are tickets available
to that. There are a bunch of events. Yeah, so I think it's important that people know that there are, getting tickets to the game is expensive. It's kind of a Taylor Swift type of deal. But there are things that are happening that are absolutely directed towards the fans and are accessible. Newell, there's that opening night that you mentioned, which is on the 3rd. There is a Super Bowl experience, which is an immersive football festival, including the Vince Lombardi being promoted. And that's going to happen at the convention center from the 5th through the 8th. There's also a parade, which is, New Orleans does better than anybody else on the 8th.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings, buy one get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties, buy two get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This information, folks can go to neworleans.com. Neworleans.com, it's the New Orleans & Company website, and you can find information and buy tickets there.
Mike, let's pivot. great news. The NOPD under the consent decree, we're going to talk to Michael Glasser later in the show, the president of Pano, they moved to the sustainment portion of this decree. It's good news for the NOPD.
Well, it's good news, first of all, just from a morale standpoint. It's well-deserved recognition. You know, you can look at the stats, or you can ask somebody on the street, or you can ask somebody who's been involved. I remember, you know, talking to Susan Hudson, the sheriff, who was the monitor before sheriff, and she said this is a vastly different police force than the one that we had over a decade ago. So it's well-deserved. I give a ton of credit to the NOPD, to Chief Kirkpatrick, to the administration who's pushed for this. And I also give credit to Judge Susie Morgan because, you know, she wasn't, there were some motions that were filed this week that asked for something different. And she just said, no, I'm going to stay the course. I'm going to respect the court's process. And that right now is getting us onto this sustainment period. So it is hard won. And it's been tough medicine. It's been expensive medicine. But I think you have to objectively look at the process and say, if we get out of it now when we deserve to, that, you know, it's worked. I mean, do you agree with that overall?
No. And look, you know, the scary part of this is 12 years under the consent decree. And I remember having that conversation with former Mayor Mitch Landrieu, you know, as he was trying to decide whether or not to entertain this situation. I said, they're not coming with a lot of money, and you're going to be involved with it for a long, long time. Those are two constants when it comes to consent decrees. And it's one of the biggest criticism of these consent decrees. You know, there's another process called collaborative reformation, which I think is a lot more fruitful and a lot quicker, and you get to the end game a lot quicker. Why more people don't avail themselves. I don't even know if the federal government's still offering it, but it would seem to me that they would avail themselves of it. But, yeah, I think, look, this is big news. And it's more in an indirect way of some of the things that it causes inside of an organization. But the sustainment period may be, and the chief and I talked about this on air, Michael, the hardest part of the moving, you know, out from under the federal government, because now you're not having these immediate monthly follow-ups and stuff. You're kind of on your own, and you got to make sure you're staying, you know, you're teeing the ball up every morning. You got to be in the fairway because they're not going to tolerate you being in the rough. There's no one standing in the rough with you to show you how to get back into the fairway. You know, so
nope, that's true.
It's going to be interesting to see, but I think they're up for the task. Let's pivot real quick. End of the year crime stats, very successful, really look good. I like the fact that we're beginning to see longer trends of these successes.
That's right. So we ended the year with 124 murders being investigated by the police, which is 124 too many without question. But when we go back to the dark days of 2022, when we started the NOLA coalition, this represents an over 50% drop. It's a 53% drop from the level that year. So it's really significant progress and lives saved. And then when people come back and say, well, this is just part of national trends, the fact is that our drop in homicides is more than twice the national average. So you can't just say that we're riding the wave. Clearly, there was something that happened here collectively that was the result of NOPD and Troop NOLA and the DA and civic groups, Police and Justice, NOLA Coalition, that collectively, the schools reopening, just collectively, we're making a difference. And it's something to, just like getting out of the consent decree, it doesn't mean that we take our foot off the gas pedal, but it's an indication that we're driving in the right direction. And that should be encouraging. That should support this new culture. So I think it's worth recognizing how far we've come so quickly. And like you said, now seeing if we can sustain this so that it becomes the new normal or better.
Absolutely. Michael, I had the new director of the Port of New Orleans and the rail system on the show the other day, and I see that there's an announcement by the port being awarded $1 million from the EPA. They seem to be very successful in getting buckets of money from a number of different sources in order to move this LIT project along.
Yeah, I mean, the LIT project has raised over $1 billion from various sources, public and private. And that's important for two reasons. You know, one is that a project of this magnitude is not going to be financed in a singular way. It's what I used to call Frankenstein financing. You know, you piece it together, you stitch it together, and then one day it comes to life. Although, hopefully, unlike Frankenstein, it doesn't try to kill you. Doesn't turn on you. But the other thing is that the more public and private sources of support that you have financially, the more political sources of support that you have. And that's also important for a project of this magnitude. So this is a small part. This is part of the sustainability management plan, which is how they reduce environmental impacts. But everything matters. And I think the next major step we're waiting for is we expect fairly soon the report from the RPC, the Regional Planning Commission, that's studying the road, the special transportation road that's going to go from the port over to Paris Road 510 so that the trucks can stay off of the two major arteries. And that'll be, I think, the next logistical and political big step.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. You point out big year coming up in 2025 for the Sewage and Water Board. I guess a number of these projects that we consider upgrades will be coming to fruition. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's funny. With Sewage and Water Board, I was talking to Ghassan the other day, and it's a bit like the infrastructure. We don't have many boil water alerts anymore on the East Bank because of those hammer towers that were built on Claiborne. But you just kind of forget about it, that it used to be, you know, a couple times a month you would have these issues. So they've gone away. So, you know, the Sewer and Water Board knows that they're succeeding when nobody's talking about them. This next one is a major, major issue. It's going to allow the Carrollton Complex to directly line into Entergy and then use its own power as backup. It's historically been vice versa, and that's led to reliability problems. But now there's going to be a dedicated substation that's going on. SWIBNO is building its own power complex, and basically we're going to have Entergy as the primary feed going into that facility, which should make it much more reliable and prevent turbines from going down during storms. So, yeah, this is a big piece in the reliability puzzle. It was hard to get here. But a lot of credit to our state legislators, to the leadership of the city, leadership of Sewer and Water Board, the council that made this happen.
Michael, a lot of consternation, conversation about Governor Landry's most recent project to deal with the homeless population. I applauded it. I had a monologue on it the other day. It's not like we didn't know these events were coming our way. Human nature is the first impression, is a lasting impression. And I made the observation, you know, people don't go home and brag about, you know, I was so encouraged to see how many, you know, homeless tents there were all over the city. You don't hear that, right?
People don't come back from San Francisco talking about, you know, how good it made them feel when they see what's happening on the streets, as an extreme example.
Right. Your thoughts?
I think that first of all, I commend your monologue to everybody to go and find it on Audacity, because I think you lay out the argument in you know, you're always on point, but I think you're particularly, your language is particularly plain and cogent on that. This is the right thing to do for many reasons. First and foremost, homeless advocates themselves, and this is quoted in the paper, have been asking for a transitional center where people can be triaged for medical care, for psychiatric care, for job training, where they can get a bus ticket home if that's what they want to do. Because taking people right from the street and then putting them into housing makes it difficult for wraparound services to be applied, because people have to go to every single house. In this case, folks are going to be consolidated where services are available, a one-stop shop. So it's actually logistically much easier to give people the support that they need. The second thing is that we're going to get snow next week. The weather might drop into the 20s. This is absolutely a humanitarian effort to get people, knowing that our low barrier shelter is full, into a space where they are going to be safe, they're going to be warm, where their pets are going to be cared for, where they can have a shower. So from a pure humanitarian standpoint, It just makes sense. And I think really what happened, and you said this, is that the model that has been working does have success under its belt, but it's going very slowly, and it appears to have stalled out. I think just saying, wait, we just need more money, belies what people are seeing with their eyes, which is that it feels like we've been going backwards on the homeless issue. And so what I'm hopeful is that we can work together, and I think we're going to work together on this, everybody, city and state, and we're going to have a system that's going to complement the existing Home for Good system, but provide a transitional center that is going to be more humane and more effective, and to your point, create streetscapes that give the public space back to the public.
Yeah, for sure. Michael, one last question before we get to the break, and we have our special guest, Joe Threat, who's the Deputy Chief Administrative Officer, Infrastructure, and Chief Resilience Officer for the City of New Orleans. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. Just call him the man.
Because it would be unfair for me to put this question to him, because I've asked you before, and you told me that it was going to happen. Canal and Rampart by the theater. Still a mess. Was talking to some folks this morning. Went to the Sanger to see, I forgot what's there right now, Juliet. They asked me, I get this question asked of me all the time. What's going on? Are they clean? Are they going to clean this up? Is it going to be done? Are they going to get the lights right over here? Because it's still a mess.
Yeah. In full transparency, it's the number one issue that we're looking at out of the 500 and some odd that we have is we talked about it at the meeting this morning, and there is a plan to get that done, get it covered up, get the lights working. It's important not just because it's a major thoroughfare, but also the NFL has its NFL honors, its Oscars event, essentially, at the Sanger. So that's a non-negotiable, and if it means that we're there, you know, putting in rocks and putting down, you know, asphalt, on Sunday, the week before, that's what it's going to take. It's a non-negotiable.
I'm going to make Joe promise that he's got a shovel in your hand and that you're out there on that site moving some of that blacktop and so forth.
It would be my pleasure. It was what I said I was going to do with my personal pothole, but they took that opportunity away from me by fixing it.
With one added feature that they don't give you any gloves, because you deserve some blisters on those hands for sure.
I do.
All right. <We'll> be... You think I'm demented?
No. I think you're pretty much on point.
We'll be right back. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., and Joe Threat joins us when we return, Deputy Chief Administrative Officer, Infrastructure, and Chief Resilience Officer for the City of New Orleans. Stay with us.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.